if you know what is going to happen in the next few months, what we will be able to experience in the next few months, I'm not sure if we've talked about this. I can't remember if we have. But Andrew, let me ask you a question. You ready?
Okay, I like questions, so.
How do you feel about trained raptors?
I wouldn't want to be the one training them.
But I'm not asking you, you know, if you would want to be training them. I'm asking you, how do you feel about trained raptors?
I have a bad feeling that it will lead to very subpar special effects.
Oh, no. You're crazy.
Well, some would say.
You're crazy. Jurassic World, Andrew, comes out on June 12th. We're getting close to that. Are you excited about Jurassic World?
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, Will, are you excited or are you concerned?
I'm excited. I mean.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, there's a touch of concern.
Okay.
But you can't do any worse than Jurassic Park 3.
No, you can't. Yeah, that's true.
So, I have a feeling that Jurassic World is gonna hit it. Hit the nail right on the head.
This is the fourth Jurassic Park film, right?
I mean, if you're counting, yes.
Okay. All right. If you remember, Steven Spielberg directed the first Jurassic Park film, right?
Yes.
And then there were now three after that first one.
Okay.
There was another blockbuster film that Steven Spielberg directed the first one of, called Jaws.
Okay.
Have you ever seen the fourth Jaws?
Is that the one in SeaWorld?
No, that's Jaws 3. And Jaws 3, let me just say, compared to Jaws 4, is like the Citizen Kane of Jaws movies.
No way.
It's called the Jaws SeaWorld, the Revenge.
The SeaWorld Jaws, though, is so bad.
But it would be better if you actually saw it in 3D as originally intended.
I guess it may be better.
No.
So Jaws the Revenge.
Jaws the Revenge.
1987.
Yes. Oh, man. It's great. It is one of the worst movies ever put on the unsuspecting public of the United States of America. In the film, Mrs. Brody feels like sharks are out to get her and her family. So she leaves her home in Amity, whatever state they're in. And instead of getting away from the water and maybe going to Kansas, she decides to go down to the Bahamas, where, because sharks are this smart, the shark follows her all the way down to the Bahamas and starts attacking her family members down in the Bahamas.
Is it the same actress that plays?
Yes, same actress. And also has Michael Caine in a supporting role in which he takes a helicopter and flies into the water to kill the shark unsuccessfully. And he's down there for a little while, and you kind of think he might be dead, and then he just kind of, like, swims up to the shore, and he's okay.
Okay, so what you're saying is that this movie could follow the same arc where Jaws 1, the original Jaws, great movie.
Yes.
You know, something to remember. Same thing with Jurassic Park. And then Jaws 2, it's okay. It's not bad. Yeah. It's okay. But it's not as good as the first. Same with, I guess, The Lost World is, you know, it's okay, but not as good as the first. Jaws 3 and SeaWorld is horrible, just like Jurassic Park 3 is horrible. So you're saying that it could be so bad.
Yeah.
That it's a stuff of legends.
Yeah.
That Jaws 4 is so bad.
Yeah, it'll make
2.8 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, you'll kind of be like, gosh, this makes me want to watch Jaws 3, or Jurassic Park 3 in this instance.
Well,
you will, after watching Jurassic World, you'll be like, gosh, I'm going to go home and watch a good movie. I'm going to watch Jurassic Park 3. None of this garbage.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that. But I, for one, am excited. Excited about Trained Raptors.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And you think Jurassic Park 4 is going to be good?
Yeah, I think.
And also, Will, another thing to point out is that the other films, it was Jurassic Park, then The Lost World Jurassic Park, and then Jurassic Park 3, and then now Jurassic World, which is similar to Jaws the Revenge, and it has the interesting different subtitle.
Where they've gotten rid of
the
numbers.
No numbers.
Oh no!
It's just not looking good for this Jurassic Park: The Revenge. I mean, Jurassic World.
Oh goodness! Well, I guess we'll have to wait until June to find out. It looks like Jaws: yeah. The Revenge has a runtime similar to Jurassic Park 3, an hour and a half, 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's a quick one. They get you in the film, and then, you know, that's it.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Either way, it is only going to be something that will hold us off, that will just entertain us momentarily while we await the 2015 college football season. You know, it's coming sooner than you think, Andrew. And a lot of teams are actually participating in football at this very moment, perhaps.
Yes.
Spring practice is going on. So that's exciting, something to be to look forward to.
Mm.
But we have we have, you know, a few good off-season topics that we want to cover and questions
okay.
that we want to ask and you know, get our get your feedback, get my feedback. You know, maybe it'll incite some emails from the fans. You know, we haven't had a show in a little over a month or about a month.
Yeah, I thought that you had forgotten how to get onto your computer, Will.
Well, I did. I forgot my password for a while.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, well.
Oh, isn't that the worst?
I'm not getting my computer. Yep. And then you just have to.
Yeah.
You know,
did you have to throw that computer
keyboard.
Away?
Well, I threw it away and got a new one.
Yeah, yeah, you have to.
So, yep. Nothing else you can do
it's
about
the worst.
It. Yep.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, where should we start? How about you start us off, Andrew? Get the ball rolling here.
Okay, the old triangular ball instead of the round ball, which is what most people are talking about right now. Well, I've got a question for you. Those hurry-up offenses, don't you think they hurt players?
Like hurt their feelings?
I don't know, but here's the thing. There are certain coaches who seem to go on this almost like a religious crusade, tearing through the country, trying to find teams that run the hurry-up offenses, and they just want to attack them and tell them that they need to stop because other people are getting hurt. Now, we don't really have statistical evidence to back this up, but a man by the name of Brett Bielema, who I think he's won maybe two SEC games in a couple years, he's probably the expert on winning and what it takes to, you know, be successful. So he's going to tell us that the best way for us to all be successful and it to be a lot equaler and everybody have their own fair share of winning would be for us to not allow hurry-up offenses. It's not fair for a few teams to have more plays per game. I mean, it hurts people. People get hurt, right, Will?
I disagree with that. I think it's odd that these coaches go out of their ways to try to change the rules to, I mean, obviously they're trying to change the rules to benefit them,
right?
Themselves. It has nothing to do with hurting players. I mean,
but it's fair. It's just more fair, right?
Yeah, but it
everybody then can win.
Yeah, I mean, then and then you get into you ban the shotgun formation because centers are hurting their fingers because they have to
throw it back so hard. Yeah,
yeah, they got to throw it back so far.
And, yeah,
and then you start banning. It's like, well, you don't really need kickoffs. Just hurt people or
just start
punting.
At the 20. Just start at the 20 every time.
Yeah, and same thing with punting. Just get rid of punting. Just say if a fourth down, just instead of punting, you just move it 35 yards downfield. Like,
yeah.
You know, don't punt. Or, for that case, field goals. Like, no, someone can get hurt. It's just, you can just take the option to get the extra point. Like, it's just yours. Like, it's magically yours.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just one of those things where you're trying to change the game to hurt people who are playing the game in the confines of the rules that it was built on.
Mm.
I mean, if there's a way that you can take advantage of the system, I mean, that's how good, successful teams take advantage of things that will help them in the long run. And that doesn't just go for football teams. I mean, that's businesses. Like, doing
right.
something different... different than everybody else is what makes you successful as
right.
long as it's within the confines of the rules.
Right.
So if running a hurry-up offense will make it more difficult for a defense to defend you, then if you can do it, which it's not anything that's easy to do because it is just as tough for a team to practice and to prepare to run that type of offense than it is to defend it, then if you can do it and you can do it within the confines of the rules, then you should do it. And same goes for anything else. I mean, it is in the confines of the rules that you can lateral the ball as much as you want.
Right.
So if someone built an offense where all you do is you play it almost like rugby and you line up and you just start lateraling it back and forth until you start making some positive ground. Okay, yeah, that's a little unorthodox.
But it's not against the rules.
It's not against the rules. And yeah, I guess you could argue more people could get hurt, but that's something that you are allowed to do. If you want to have a defense where your strategy is to put 11 guys up on the line and all of them just crash into the line as hard as they can every single play to disrupt the quarterback or whatever, don't even worry about the receivers or anybody else, just crash the line as hard as you can every single play. Okay.
I don't think it'll work, but
you can certainly try it. And hurry up offense, I think, falls under the same thing. The rule is that as soon as the official can put the ball down and a reasonable amount of time has gone by, I can't remember the exact amount of time. I think it's maybe 10 seconds. Usually it's just as long as it takes for the official to put the ball down, set it, and then blow the whistle, set the line to make sure that people aren't lined up off sides or anything, and then blow the whistle. I think that's as long as you need for. So... But if you, I guess these coaches, what they want to do is they want to slow it down to where you can't snap the ball until there's 25 seconds left in the play clock or something like that. I don't know, but I think it's ridiculous.
Well, I think here's the thing, Will.
Okay.
You're ready for me to talk now? Okay.
Yeah. I'm waiting.
Okay. Anxiously waiting. Right.
Right.
Well, Will, there are only so many great defensive players out there, right? And we all know this. Coaches know it. There's only so many great defensive players. You're not going to have them all, and you're probably not going to have enough for if they're playing 80 plays a game, you're going to have to get into your backups. And those backups aren't going to be quite as good as your first string. So there's going to be a talent drop-off. And these coaches don't want that. They want to be able to get their best guys out there for every single play. So it goes against them, and it doesn't help them when you are having to substitute the guys who aren't quite as good. And when you do that, if the team is well-versed and knows how to run their offense, they're going to exploit your deficiencies. So it only goes to say, I mean, that's obviously why this is going on. I don't think that until that they show me some actual statistical proof that we are losing a bunch of players to injuries only in these hurry-up offense games, then I'll say, okay, I'll go with you. But I think we need to see some statistical proof before we just start going and banning things.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay. Okay. I got one for you. Virginia
okay.
Tech. Are you ready for Virginia Tech?
Well, I've heard of them.
They play football, I think. They weren't very good last year.
Yes.
Would you agree with that? With that assessment?
Well, I don't want to go and, you know, what? How would you say, offend those of you who may or may not be Hokie fans, right?
Well, they went 7-6, which for Hokie fans is probably not very good in their opinion.
Yeah, it's not really it's not really Beamer ball at its finest.
One of the main excuses was injuries were the reason why they didn't play very well last season.
Right.
Do you believe that injuries were the problem? And furthermore,
well,
do you think that they will be better next year?
I will say this, Will. They were decimated by injuries in this last season. So, you know, they had a lot of big... I mean, their top running backs now, well, they did have an injury to their running back, Shy McKenzie, I believe. And he had a season-ending injury, but unfortunately, he won't be coming back even though he's healthy. Do you want to expand upon that a little bit?
I'll let you do that. I think you know this story better than I do.
Oh, you don't study much, Will?
I do. I just don't remember all the details.
Oh, well, this football player, Shy McKenzie, was arrested in the last month and kicked off the team for some, we'll say, unscrupulous relations with underage high school girls. So
yeah,
he's actually going to be probably in prison, not on the football field next year for Frank Beamer. That was their top running back heading into next year, and they were kind of counting on him coming back and having a big year. So I understand the injuries were a problem, and I think that they are going to be better next year. I don't know that their quarterback situation is going to be resolved, and I'm not sure that their running back situation is going to be resolved. Frank Beamer's putting on a good face. For his sake, I hope they're better, but I'm not sure as of yet. I really think that defensively, we just go to assume that defensive squad is going to be really good, and Bud Foster's going to have them ready to go. But they really need to put some more points on the board, and really their defense wasn't quite as good as it's been in the last few years either. So I think that they have a long road ahead of them, and I don't know that Frank Beamer is going to be around much longer. I mean, you know, it just hasn't been quite as good the last few years.
Right. And I think that he is absolutely closer to the end than to the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, and I think you're right, and I think that
I guess he's not going to be coaching when he's 95, probably. So.
Well, I mean, there have been some, so you know, I'm not going to say he's not, but I do think that they need to start thinking about the inevitable retirement plan, and I don't want to put him out too soon, but you just never know, and you don't like to see a coach hanging around for longer than they should be there.
Right.
I don't like to use the term legacy and start throwing big things out like that. But really, you don't want to end on a sour note. It's better to go out on top than stay and not really have a handle on it. So hopefully, for his sake, he can kind of put together a good year next year. But I don't know. I'm not convinced, and I know some Hokie fans might send us some emails and try and explain why they're going to be better. And hopefully you're right.
Right. Okay, shall we move on?
Well, I'm comfortable with that, Will, if you are.
Do you have a question for me?
Well, you know, I know that you have not been always the biggest proponent of Jimbo Fisher's. Not, sometimes I think you don't give him the credit that he deserves.
Calm down. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm just saying I think that there are some folks who are ready to write off Jimbo Fisher, and I'm curious kind of where you stand. Do you think that he gets the respect as a coach that he deserves? And I've been hearing some people say that next year Clemson is the team to beat in the ACC. Where do you think FSU stands in all of that?
So to answer your first part of your question,
okay,
about Jimbo Fisher not getting the respect that some other coaches do, and part of that, you know, that goes into that is FSU gets one loss. Like last year, for example, people were just waiting and waiting and waiting for FSU to
right.
lose a game. And one loss would have meant you know, there's no way that they would have gone to the playoffs with one loss in the regular season.
Hmm.
Going into the 14 playoff last year. Whereas all the other teams were allowed to have a loss, but not FSU. And I don't necessarily think it is because of Jimbo Fisher directly. I think it's more to do with Jameis Winston.
Okay.
Last year.
I think that
you know, you had a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback.
Okay.
Returning, and you know, there's, I think a lot of the boneheaded things that he did were reflected onto Jimbo Fisher and the entire team. So I think that is the reason why they didn't get the respect, because of Winston. Regardless of the fact that the quarterback position, while the most important position on the field, is just one piece in the cog. You need everything to work well to have an undefeated season. And Jimbo Fisher orchestrating that, recruiting those players, coaching those players up, coming up with game plans for those games, and also dealing with a quarterback that, frankly, was probably very difficult to coach.
Right.
All that said, he brought about, you know, one of the longest winning streaks in college football in recent memory, and a national title to boot, and an appearance in the first college football playoffs. I mean, I think Jimbo Fisher absolutely does deserve respect in the same order that you would give coaches like Les Miles, and maybe not so much Urban Meyer and Nick Saban, but that's just because they've been coaching longer and have longer resumes. But I think that you have to mention Jimbo Fisher in the same sentence. The other half of your question: are they the team to beat in the ACC next year, or is perhaps Clemson? I think you have to add Georgia Tech to that mix also.
Okay.
I think the three teams to beat in the ACC going into next year are Florida State, Clemson, and Georgia Tech. All three of those teams had great years last year. All three of those teams have reason to think that they will be good again this year. Clemson, obviously, Dabo Sweeney is one of the best recruiters in the country. Deshaun Watson coming in as a full-time quarterback. We'll see how that works. He obviously has the tools. He's very, very athletic.
If he can stay healthy.
If he can stay healthy.
Yeah.
I think that Clemson could be very, very good. Georgia Tech, obviously, with Justin Thomas, returning offensive line, defense that should improve, and a lot of young skill players that still have to prove themselves, but I think they're in a position to do well in the Coastal, even with a very, very difficult schedule. I think out of all those three teams, you know, FSU is still the champion in the ACC. And yeah, they're going to be without Jameis Winston. They still have a lot of tools to work with. And so I do still think that FSU is the team to beat in the ACC, regardless of what Georgia Tech and Clemson have done. I mean, they went 8-0 in the league last year and won the conference championship game. I mean, mm-hmm. they are still the team to beat. And yeah, they don't have Winston coming back, but they still have – they're reloading like they do every year.
Yeah. So. Now, here's another question though, on top of that. In the ACC, who are your top three coaches? You name three teams. I'm curious if you're also going to name those three teams as having the three best coaches in the league. I mean, because you got still having, you know, Larry Fedora is in the mix. Frank Beamer's in the mix. You know, you've got some other guys. So I didn't know.
For coaches, I would say those three coaches are the best three coaches in the league.
Okay.
Larry Fedora, it's always very high expectations, and it always comes crashing down, right? Al Golden.
Okay.
Were you going to say something?
No, I mean, you're not going to include Frank Beamer. They have one down year, and so Frank Beamer.
I hadn't gotten that. I was going to say Al Golden. Same story. You have a good recruiting class every year, but what have you done? When was the last time Miami, you know, smelled the ACC championship game? You know, never. Mm-hmm. They've never mm-hmm. played in it. Frank Beamer, I think, is a good coach. Bud Foster, right there with him. I think it's a good combination of the two. They are good coaches together, but they have struggled the last few seasons, and they haven't been the same team that they, you know, that Frank Beamer was putting together. Beamer Bowl's dead. When was the last time that special teams was dangerous for Virginia Tech? It's been a long time. That used to be his platform. But that's kind of gone downhill. David Cutcliffe, I think, is a really good coach. Duke is, I mean, he's turned Duke around, and Duke is a threat. They went to the ACC championship game in 2013. They played very good ball at times in 2014. Knocking off Georgia Tech is, you know, was a great win for them. Albeit they had a very easy schedule. And next year's schedule for Duke, if you look at their schedule for next year, it's laughable. I mean, it's almost embarrassing how easy Duke's schedule is for next year. I don't know how that happens to where every year their schedule just seems so light compared to other teams in the division. But I think David Cutcliffe is a good coach. You know, going from there, you know,
Bobby Petrino.
To answer your question,
Bobby Petrino. You're completely leaving out probably one of the top coaches in the league.
I always forget about Louisville. I keep forgetting that they're in the ACC.
And I would venture to say that Bobby Petrino, I would put him in my top three.
So who would be your top three?
I would say that my top three would probably be...
In no particular order.
In no particular order. And I know that this is going to make some people angry. Well, okay. I would say Jimbo Fisher. I would then also say Bobby Petrino, and I would say Paul Johnson.
So no Dabo, huh?
See, I know it's going to make some people, and I like Dabo Swinney. I really do. And I think that, now that we're on Dabo Swinney. Dabo Swinney, in my opinion, has been treated really unfairly this offseason. Have you seen some of the stuff that was going on with him?
Yeah, I saw that he was even featured on John Oliver's show.
Well, I mean,
last
yeah,
week tonight.
Yeah, they were joking about him, and to me, that was just a load of BS. I mean, it was just ridiculous because they were. For those of you who don't know, Dabo was making a comment about how if we start paying college football players, I'm in the wrong business. And I'm going to do something else. And so John Oliver then was trying to turn this into a, you know, as they always do, some folks always do, how it's not fair that he makes way too much money to be saying that other people shouldn't have money. Oh, he makes, it's easy for somebody who makes $3 million to say
right.
that, well, these kids shouldn't have a, that's just ridiculous. Dabo Swinney has worked very hard to make $3 million. When Dabo yeah. Swinney was 18 years old and 19 years old and 20 years old and 21, 2, 3, 4, 5, he was not making $3 million a year. When he graduated from his undergrad, doing the same thing that those current players are doing, playing football, then he became a GA. Do you think he made any money as a GA?
No.
None. No. You're a GA, you make nothing. Then your first assistant job, when you're a position coach at a small school, do you think he's making any money then? No.
He'd be making like $40,000 a year.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's after at least 2 years of being a GA, where you're making no money and working at least 90 hours a week. So I think it's ridiculous that these people who don't know what they're talking about make these kind of comparisons that don't, you can't compare. You're comparing apples and oranges. And I think that Dabo Swinney took a very, very unfair, you know, beating in the media. And I just don't understand how some people don't get the facts on the situation and try and turn something that it's not. I think
what Dabo Swinney, what's different about him and why I kind of understand why you may not put him on the list is, like, when I think of Paul Johnson, I think that he is an amazing schemer and play caller.
Calls his own plays, yeah.
Calls his own plays. I mean, he is such a good game day coach. He knows his players. He knows situations. He's very, very X's and O's smart. Like, he does it the right way. I think very similar to Jimbo Fisher. I think he's an excellent leader. He knows what it takes to win, and he's carried that out. Petrino, he's a very, very fiery coach, and he can get players to do what he wants them to do.
Well, I guess that you kind of exposed me a little bit. All three of the coaches I picked all call their own offensive plays, so maybe
right.
I'm biased towards
right, and maybe you're biased because what I was going to say about Dabo is what I think separates him a little bit is I think he is an excellent manager.
Yeah.
He knows how to put people around him that are the right people, and he is an excellent motivator and an excellent recruiter. And okay, those skill set may not sound as important as being smart X's and O's wise or being fiery or calling your own plays or whatever, but it's still very, very important. I mean, if you can put the right people around you, that's a lot more difficult than you would maybe think it should be. It's very, very difficult to have the right people around you. It's very difficult to motivate people, and he's good at it. He knows what to say to 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, and not just on the field, but in the living rooms to get them to come and play in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that he is, I think he's a great coach. Maybe not the best game day coach per se, but he's still a very, very good football coach. And I hope he sticks around at Clemson for a while because he's doing good things there.
Yeah, I agree. I think he is. I think you're right. He does things the right way, and I think that sometimes he does get the short end of the stick, but I really do think he's a good coach. For whatever reason, I might be biased against coaches who don't call their own plays, but I wouldn't put him in my top three.
Right. One other question, Andrew, and then we'll call it a cast.
You had to get a cast?
Yeah, I'll call it a podcast.
Right.
We'll call it a podcast, which is what we're doing. Who is more likely, speaking of some ACC teams, the three specifically, plus others, who is more likely at the end of the 2015 season to end up in the four-team playoff of these teams that I'm about to list off?
Okay, you're going to list them for me.
Yeah, I'm going to list them, and you're going to tell me who you think is the most likely.
Okay, I'm getting my pen and paper out. I'm going to write them down.
Okay, I'll say them slowly.
Okay.
Clemson.
Spell that for me.
C-L-I-M-P-S-U-M.
Now, who Clemson. Is the one who's biased against Clemson right now, Will? That was an unfair shot that you took against that university, and I think it's wrong. You're just, you know.
Clemson.
Okay.
Clemson, Tennessee, Georgia, Georgia Tech, FSU.
Which of those teams is more likely to be in the four-team playoff?
Which of those four teams is more likely to be in the playoff?
Well, okay, the first one I'm going to cross off of that would be Tennessee. I think that Tennessee is, people are saying they're back. I mean, shoot, if we're talking about teams that are going to be back, the U definitely needs to be in that list because the U will be back next year, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And North Carolina.
Oh, gosh, they're going to be so good.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah, they might win seven games next year.
I think with the 14 playoff, the teams that end up here, the teams that end up in championship games, they're not teams that come out of nowhere,
right?
Typically,
yeah.
I think to make it to the playoff, you have to build up to it. You either have to already be there, or you have to build up to it. In Tennessee, I think you can cross it off because, while yeah, I understand they may be coming back, but I think it's very, very difficult to jump from
6-6 to. Undefeated. Yeah,
yeah, 6-6 to undefeated. I think that's very, very difficult to do. Well, they were 7. Well, I guess 6-6 regular season, 7-6 overall is what they ended up with.
Yeah.
So I think it is very, very difficult to jump that much. I think if you're a 10-win, you know, even a 9-win, I think maybe you can expect to make that jump. But going from 6 or 7 wins, that's a lot to ask. So okay, so I think we can cross them out. What about the others? Clemson, Georgia, Georgia Tech, FSU.
I would also then, the next one I would say is Clemson. I don't think Clemson would be in the 14 playoff. And here's why. I'm just concerned about them not having the defense that they had last year and having some growing pains on the offense.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think Deshaun Watson is going to be an upgrade for them in offense. I think that they will play better in offense. But you lose, 10 guys from your defense?
Yeah.
I mean, and that defense is what made you good last year. I mean, you were the number one defense in the country, and all of a sudden you're losing 10 starters. So now let's say you go from a top 5 defense to a top 20 defense. I mean, that's
a game changer.
If the offense stays about what it was, then maybe a little bit better, then you're going to – that. I think you may regress a little bit this season.
Yeah, I agree. And then we have a couple more teams in there. Honestly, I think the FSU is going to take a little bit of a backdrop. And here's why. In my opinion, and it's not necessarily fair, and I don't think it is fair, all these other teams can lose a game and rebound.
Yeah.
FSU cannot lose a single game.
I don't think so this year. Unless they something can't. Weird happens. And, you know, there's maybe a whole bunch of one loss and some two loss teams in the mix. Like, I agree with you. I think that if they lose a game, they might be out of it. And with their schedule coming up next year, they have some tough games. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to play at Georgia Tech, you got to play at Clemson. You got to play at Florida, and not saying that Florida's going to be good, but you know, that those are three big games that you have to play on the road. The good news for them is they don't really have a whole lot of very tough out of conference games, which hurts their strength of schedule. Which even more so, you lose a game, then you may be out of the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then also replacing Jameis Winston, I think it's going to be tough. It's going to be tougher than they think so. And I think, yeah, you're right. I think there's going to be some growing pains that go along with that.
I mean, you could still win 10 or 11 games and not get into the 14 playoff. I really think it's a good team, but I think that they, unlike everybody else, cannot afford to lose a single game. So what does that leave me with, Will?
So that loses with Georgia and Georgia Tech.
Well, I'm going to be honest, Will. You know how I am. I'm always trying to be honest, okay? Of those two teams, I can't buy into Georgia. And I'm not saying that I think Georgia Tech necessarily is going to make the 14 playoff, but I think Georgia Tech is in a good position to where they could. Just like you talked about a minute ago, you're not going to go from 6-6 to undefeated.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech 2 years ago had some growing pains, lost some games. Maybe they shouldn't have lost, went 7-5. Last year, made the jump, and they won some games, and they lost two games last year. But I think that they're in a position to where there's enough youth on that team from last year coming back to where they can learn from, hey, we don't want to lose against North Carolina. We need to make sure and show up every game. You have to kind of position yourself. I really think that they have the potential to have a special season. It's easier now than it once was to get into that picture with that 14 playoff. Just like you said, you just need to win your conference championship. Something I think Georgia Tech could win a conference championship next year. If they win a conference championship, they could be in the 14 playoff.
And I think between these two teams, and really kind of a lot of the teams that we've talked about, one of the big deciding factors is a returning quarterback.
Quarterback, yeah, absolutely.
And Georgia Tech is returning arguably the best quarterback that they've had in the past
several years. Yeah, several years.
I mean, seriously. I think you're going back as far as, Hamilton. I mean,
yeah.
Can you think of a quarterback that's better than what we have right now? I honestly can't.
No, I can't either.
And he's got two more years of eligibility. But whereas Georgia is losing their quarterback. Not only they're losing a quarterback, they're losing their offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
That could be more difficult than people think. Who knows what?
Oh, Bobo! They wanted him to leave. Will, they wanted him to leave. Mike Bobo is the problem with that team.
Yeah,
right.
Mike Bobo's the problem. Yeah. No.
Okay.
Mike Bobo was never the problem. There's a lot of things that you could say were problems. Mike Bobo was not one of them. I think that Georgia's going to find out pretty quick that they had something good with Mike Bobo. It's going to be really, really interesting to see what they're going to be able to do without Hudson Mason. I mean, he was not the best quarterback that they've had, but he was a good one. And who takes the reins? I don't know. I'm sure they have someone lined up and ready to go, but I think, as far as I know, the quarterback battle is still pretty wide open.
Yeah.
Let's see. Bryce Ramsey, I think. I don't think he's just gonna take over.
Okay.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But to answer your question, I think out of all those teams. And I want to be honest too. I'm trying not to be favorable, but just looking at the numbers, looking at going forward, I think that Georgia Tech has a very good shot.
Yeah.
At making the 14 playoff, and it's not going to be easy. You got a tough schedule this year.
Yeah.
You got to play at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You got to play at Duke. You lost to Duke last year. You got to go to Duke this year. You got to play at Clemson, which we haven't won in Clemson since what, 2008.
I think you might be right.
You got Florida State. You had to go to Virginia, which we've kind of broken that curse with Virginia, but you've still got to go there. You got to go at Miami. We haven't played well in Miami recently. And then you got to play Georgia at the end of the season. I mean, that's there's a lot of tough games in that schedule.
Yeah,
to get through there unscathed is going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I agree. And it's if you can make it through that schedule, in my opinion, only with one loss. And
yeah,
if you lose
like to Clemson, or Florida State, or something like, or even you know Notre Dame, or even Georgia, and go to the ACC championship game and win it, and then you have a 12-1 season.
You got to be in the mix. You definitely got to be in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Will, I have one last thing, and I know you want to leave me, but I have one last thing that I really think we need to talk about.
Oh gosh,
have you seen that Pat Hayden talking about the problem at USC? You remember a few years ago they were put on probation, right?
Yeah, I saw that.
What is your thought? Now, our listeners might not be as familiar, but essentially, USC was put on probation, and some files were recently brought to the public in which the investigator basically said, hey, we're going to penalize USC more because I don't like their current coach, whatever that guy's name is, Lane Kiffin. And I mean, that's understandable, I guess. So he said, I don't like Lane Kiffin. They shouldn't have hired him, so we need to penalize him harder at USC. So this is not the kind of thing the NCAA, who is supposed to look at every case evenly and fairly and without bias towards who the teams are, this doesn't really paint a picture of that.
I don't have a whole lot to say about it, Andrew.
Okay.
Except to say that,
yes,
I think that the kind of stuff that goes on that you're mentioning happens more often than we think.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
I think it's happened to Georgia Tech.
I'm sure it has. Ohio State?
I think it happened to Ohio State.
Probably happened to Miami. It obviously happened to Miami, and the NCAA got caught.
Yeah.
You know, with their hand in the cookie jar.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think this is a wait and see. I want to see what's in those 500 pages or whatever they say of documents. I want to see what those say before I make a determination on what I think. But I think it's a red flag for sure.
Well, you know the going to a different sport. The old Jerry Tarkanian, the basketball coach at UNLV for a number of years, he had the famous quote, the NCAA is so mad at Kentucky it put Cleveland State on 2 years probation, meaning that he always felt like he at UNLV was treated unfairly compared to these big schools like Kentucky and North Carolina and Duke because he was not one of the big name programs. And I think this is another example of that, and it's something that I don't know if the NCAA ever really will have to clean up. Honestly.
Right.
So it is what it is, and that might not be a good note to lead it on, Will, but, or leave it on, Will, but there you go.
Yeah, there you go. So that this is a podcast.
Yep.
And I think we should probably mention our names. My name, of course, is Will Patton. I've been joined by
Andrew Brown.
This is the Fourth and Short podcast.
It is.
fourthandshort.com.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you can always email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com and find us on Facebook simply by searching for Fourth and Short Podcast. Andrew, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Oh, I hope so.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we will speak to you next time. Goodbye.